Hello and welcome to Outbeat Now, one of the four Outbeat radio programs that air each month here on KRCB Radio. If you're a first-time listener, Outbeat Now is a public affairs show for and about the LGBT community here in the North Bay and beyond. I'm Greg Moralia. Jeff Basham is off tonight. Well, we're going to continue with the National Coming Out Day theme this month. We've got three guests who are all with us tonight. Their first two created a very unique website called anotetomykid.com. And this is a site for parents to post letters to their kids in response to their coming out. And then on the Outbeat Youth segment, South Florida firefighter Brett Dunkel joins us to talk about his new website for LGBT youth called You Can Be Anything You Want to Be. We'll also be getting caught up with Michael Huerta, who is back to update us on his run for mayor for the city of Las Cruces, New Mexico. All that's coming up next, but first, here's your Outbeat Radio news for Sunday, October 24th, 2011. The Human Rights Campaign on Wednesday launched Americans for Marriage Equality, an ongoing public engagement initiative that features videos of prominent Americans talking about their support for the freedom of same-sex couples to marry.
Hi, I'm Mayor Cory Booker, and I support marriage equality. I support it because from my earliest of ages, I made a pledge that we will be a nation with liberty and justice for all. I support marriage equality because I believe in the 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law. And I support marriage equality because I support love. And in this nation, we need a lot more of it. So please join us. Join us in the movement for justice. Join us in supporting marriage equality. Join us in supporting the ideals and the hope and the dream of America.
The HRC said it planned to roll out targeted videos over the coming months, playing off the Americans brand, including Republicans for Marriage Equality, African Americans for Marriage Equality, and elected officials for Marriage Equality. And this week in San Francisco, police say a brass plaque honoring slain San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk was stolen from the city's Castro neighborhood sometime over last weekend. The San Francisco Chronicle reported that the 3-foot by 2-foot plaque in place for almost three decades had been housed outside the gates of the Castro Muni station in Harvey Milk Plaza. Supervisor Scott Weiner said, "This plaque is an iconic part of the history of this neighborhood. Whoever took it, I just ask that you return it, no questions asked." Removing the plaque, which had been bolted into the cement, was probably not an easy task, said police spokesman Sergeant Michael Andrzejczyk. He said for something of that size, it would have taken some time and effort to remove, and possibly more than one person to remove it. Police said because photos of Milk adjacent to the plaque weren't stolen or disfigured, the theft would not be thought to be an anti-gay gesture. And here in the North Bay, Halloween celebrations will be as plentiful as trick-or-treaters' goodie bags. Halloween happens a week from Monday, but next weekend will be chock-full of dance parties, costume contests, and an event that will truly honor the dead. On Saturday, October 29th, from 7 to 11 p.m., Sonoma Gaydar, out in the vineyard, will host a costume bash and dance at the Deerfield Ranch Winery Cave, 10200 Sonoma Valley in Kenwood. Wine will be for sale by the glass or bottle, and light hors d'oeuvres will be served. The theme for this year's event is Be a Superhero. Tickets are $25 and space is limited to RSVP. Email Gary at outinthevineyard.com. Your Halloween Groove, the North Bay's LGBTQI dance party, also happens on Saturday the 29th at 7 p.m. at the Hilton Sonoma County Wine Country, 3555 Round Barn Boulevard in Santa Rosa. Hot off their amazing set at the Sonoma County Pride, the Battling Bluebirds will perform live. Miss DJ Monica will also spin hip-hop, R&B, and top 40 hits. The costume contest begins at 10:30 p.m., and a portion of the proceeds will benefit Positive Images. Tickets are $15, and you can learn more at 707-236-5500. A zombie crawl kicks off the holiday weekend at the Russian River. On Friday, October 28th, at the R3, formerly the Triple R, at 7 p.m., and on Saturday, the Progressive Costume Contest returns to Guerneville, starting with a sign-up at R3 at 7 p.m. The judging starts at 8:30 p.m., and then it moves over to the Rainbow Cattle Company at 10, then across the street to McTee's Bullpen, and finally ends up in the parking lot of Trio at midnight. Jerry Knight's River Theater, formerly Club Fab, will also host a big monster mash. And finally, from 7 to 9 p.m., the Russian River Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence will host Metamorphosis, the second annual Hollow Mass at the river. Everyone's invited to travel behind the veil to acknowledge and honor those who have passed before us. There'll be a memorial altar, a public ritual, readings, and more with Reverend Lisa Hamilton, Religious Science Reverend Diana Wheeler of the Knight Ministries, and folks from the Center for Sacred Studies. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, October 25th at 1:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Glacier Center in Santa Rosa. And also at 6:30 p.m. that night, the Transgender North Bay Group meets at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street. On Thursday, October 27th at noon, the Women's Brown Bag Lunch discussion happens at 30 North San Pedro Road in San Rafael. And also at 6:30 that night, the men's peer-to-peer group will meet at Face-to-Face, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And if you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. Now back to Outbeat Now, right here on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. Okay, let's get started with our first two guests, Patrick Wallace and Michael Volpott. They're here to talk about their new website they created called anotetomykid.com. Michael and Patrick, welcome to Outbeat Radio.
Thank you for having us. Thanks for having us, Greg.
Well, Patrick, let's start with you. Why don't you tell us a little about yourself, where you grew up, and about your coming out story.
Okay, great. I am from San Diego. I lived here pretty much my whole life. My parents still live in the house that I grew up in Scripps Ranch, which is about 20 minutes north of downtown San Diego. I went to school in San Diego and then graduated high school, went up to Oregon, to University of Oregon, just for a change of pace, which I definitely got. And I came out right around my junior year in college, and I slowly came out to friends first and, you know, started off with my close girlfriends and then started telling the guys who, you know, I was a little bit more nervous about. I played on the volleyball team at University of Oregon, so I gradually let the guys know, and everybody received it really well. You know, telling my parents was the hardest thing, which I think is pretty common in our community. But I eventually told them after I graduated from college, and my dad flew up to talk to me about it from San Diego. He flew up to Portland, where I was living at the time, and we had a very emotional conversation about it. But you know, they worked really hard to understand it and to show their support, and it turned out to be a really positive experience in the long run.
Fantastic. Now, how did you meet Michael?
I met Michael when I went to San Francisco Pride for the first time. We actually met through some friends in the Castro.
Excellent. And Michael, tell us a little about your story.
Yeah, so I think my story is a little interesting. I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and there was a kid that lived on my street, and he and I, from a very early age, would talk about how cute we thought certain guys were, and you know, we both ended up coming out of the closet later in life, and his sister is actually now married to my brother, which is very strange. But when I was about 12 years old, I sat my mom down and I told her that I think I like boys, and she totally flipped out and decided to like say to me, like, let's not talk about this, you know, leave it alone. So I kind of stuffed it, you know, and maybe about when I was 18, I went back to her and I said, listen, Mom, I'm gay, and I want to deal with this. And she, again, completely, you know, just blanked it out. And then a few weeks later, my brother called me and he said, hey, I have a question I have to ask you. Mom wants to know something. And I'm like, what does she want to know? And he said, she wants to know if you're, you know. And I'm like, what do you mean by you know? And I knew exactly what he meant, but I wanted him to say it. And so I said, Ray, listen, if you can't say it, then I'm not going to tell you what the answer is. And he said, fine, she wants to know if you're gay. And that kind of started it out for me. What was interesting is that my mother never told my dad. And 5 years later, I was living in Ohio at the time. I drove home and I sat my dad down and I told him. And he really was very, very, very sad. And it made me realize that my parents were going through this whole coming out process themselves. they were kind of mourning the loss of all these expectations that they had for me. And I had done everything, like gone to grade school, gone to high school, gone to college, and now I was supposed to get married and have kids, and I wasn't doing that for them.
Wow. Well, both of you had some pretty interesting experience with your parents. Patrick, your dad flew all the way up to Portland. Was that the reason that he flew up there?
It was. You know, I told them over the phone one night when I just felt like I couldn't keep it to myself anymore. And they both were actually pretty shocked. And my mom was having a really tough time dealing with it. She told me later, and also in one of the notes that we posted on anotesmykid.com, that, you know, she had these visions of what my future would be like, kind of like what Michael was alluding to. You know, all these expectations that they had built up over the years of how my life would turn out.
Right.
And those were, you know, pretty much instantly shattered, at least altered. So my dad, yeah, he flew up. We went to a coffee house in downtown Portland and sat across from each other over an espresso and cried, bawled our eyes out, had a really good conversation. He went back to San Diego and told my mom all about it. And they started to deal with this new idea of who their son might be.
Now, how are both of your parents, Michael and Patrick, how are they now?
My parents are awesome. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better mom. It kind of makes me cry a little bit when I think about it.
She's amazing.
She's a super person. My father is totally amazing. You know, my dad, my dad isn't the most emotional person all the time. And about 8 years ago, my business partner, Kate, and I decided to start our own PR firm, but he's the one that encouraged me to do it. I was having a really hard time with a job of mine, and I just wasn't happy, and he pulled me aside and he said, if you're not happy, do your own thing, and guess what? I'm going to fund you for a year. And he said so much more to me in that one sentence than he knows.
Sure.
He said, I love you, I trust you, and I believe in you, mm-hmm. You know, and it's okay. And I heard, like, it's okay that you're gay. I don't mind. That's not a big deal.
Right. Wow. That's really, really impressive. Patrick, how about for you?
They're fantastic. They actually came around really quickly, and they explained it to my extended family. I have a very large extended family that gets together every Thanksgiving in Palm Springs. There's about 50 of us.
Uh-huh.
And so they helped me kind of open up to the rest of my family. And they've been incredibly supportive. I've been in a relationship for about, almost 3 years now, and we become domestic partners, and they are extremely supportive of me and Mike, I really couldn't ask for better parents.
Good for you. Excellent.
Yeah, I consider myself very lucky.
Very good. Well, the two of you have come up with this amazing website called anotetomykid.com. Where did this idea come from?
So it actually came from my mom. My friend's nephew was coming out of the closet, and she said to me, you know, my sister would really love to chat with your mom because her son's coming out. And, you know, she wants to hear, like, as a mother, how did she deal with it? And so I emailed my mom and said, hey, would you talk to Rosie about this? And my mom emailed me back the most heartfelt and wonderful letter about how wonderful it is to have a gay son, and that's what she'll tell her, and that it's not about whether somebody's gay or straight, but what kind of person he or she is. And I just was overwhelmed when I got the letter, and I'm like, wow, my mother really, like, has come around, and she believes in me, and she loves me so much. And so I posted it to Facebook, and the first phone call I got was from Patrick. And Patrick and I talked about the letter and talked about the importance of the letter, and we thought, wouldn't it be great if parents had a platform to communicate this kind of thing to their children? And so then Patrick turned around and got his parents to write letters to him, and then we launched the site. And it's just kind of, you know, moved on from there, and it's been great.
Well, you make a really good point. I've heard many people talk about how when kids come out to their parents also need to come out, and that takes some time, just like it did for us when we came out. Patrick, what do you think about that idea?
Well, you know, I think that I probably speak for all of us when I say that, you know, we're constantly coming out, right? So just because we've told our immediate family and our friends and maybe some of our colleagues that we're gay, there's always someone who hasn't heard it yet. So it's something that we're constantly doing, and I think it's something that, you know, our parents and those people who are a part of our support group are experiencing to some degree as well. You know, our parents are, you know, meeting new people all the time, and those people are saying, my kids accomplished this, you know, and they're living here. How about your kids? What are they doing? You know, and so my mom, you know, or my dad would probably tell the story about my sister and her husband who live in Austin and have two beautiful boys, and then they talk about their other kids, and, you know, inevitably sometimes it comes up that, you know, Patrick and his partner Mike, you know, live in San Diego, and then, you know, they deal with any questions that come after that. Sometimes I think it's, you know, it's difficult for people to know where to go from there, you know, to ask questions about, you know, someone's gay children, so they just kind of glaze right over it. And other times people open up and talk about the experiences that they've had, you know. Sometimes a couple of my mom's friends actually have said that, oh, I have a gay son too. And so it's opened up a whole new dialogue.
Great. How long has the site been live?
It's been up since June. We actually uploaded a few letters just so we can kind of get a feel for the format and the layout in May, but we launched it in June.
Okay. And Michael, tell us about some of the contributions that you've seen to the site.
Yeah, Patrick? You know what? There's one letter that I'd love to read, if that's okay, Greg.
Yeah.
It's from a dad in Santa Rosa to his daughter, Emily. So it goes, "Dear Emily, this note is probably long overdue. Although I hope and pray the feelings behind it are nothing new to you, they won't be if I did my job as a dad. I want to say how proud I am of the person you've become, of the person you've grown to be, and how pleased I am that you found someone to be with you that makes you happy. I'm also glad you have become comfortable in you being you. You've turned out to be a strong, vibrant woman, establishing her independence and her own place in the world. I knew you weren't always happy in high school, early college, and I realize now that you might have felt lonely or unhappy because of not fitting in. And I'm sorry you didn't feel comfortable enough to share everything with me then, part of the daughter-dad dynamic that I wish we were more successful at. Given all the things teens go through and how reserved you tended to be anyway, I didn't realize your sexual orientation and sometimes felt a little helpless in trying to help make you happy, which I still think is one of my key jobs and the role of any good dad. Again, looking back, you might have seen my traditional Catholic faith and my oft-times absolutely sure approach to right and wrong, especially for you kids, as a barrier to sharing. And if so, I'm sorry again, because nothing in my belief system, faith, or values in any way impacts my love for you, my little girl. Okay, I know you're 25 and not so little at all anymore. I love you and have always been proud of that you're my daughter. It doesn't matter to me who you love or find a connection with, as long as you care for them, they care for you, and you are happy. That's really all parents want for their kids, and what constitutes a parent's greatest fear that their child won't be happy. One thing I pray every time on my knees at church is that you and your brother will find fulfillment and happiness in your careers and in your personal lives, in whatever form that comes. Your mom and I love you, we're here for you, and we will always be here for you. I hope this makes you smile. Love, Dad."
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. And so this one came from Santa Rosa. Where have these letters been coming from? Have they all been local, or have they been from around the world?
They've been from all over the U.S. You know, from Tennessee to Virginia to California. We've had some from Canada as well as England and Scotland even. Pretty wide array.
And so what's the process? If a parent wants to contribute a letter, what do they do?
So they just write the letter, you know, and then they send it to either Patrick or I. They can find our email addresses on the website, or they can send it to Michael at LarkinVolpat.com or Patrick at anotetomykid.com. Right, Patrick? Didn't you just register for an email address?
Yeah, I just created one. They could also go to the site, Greg, and click submit a letter, and that'll automatically generate an email.
Okay. So that sounds like the easiest way to do it. Just go to anotetomykid.com and then submit it right online.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. And then we'll have that link on the Outbeat Youth website as well. So if people miss it, they can go there and there'll be a link. Is there any type of screening process that you go through with the letters?
You know what? Patrick and I both read the letters before they go up on the site, and that's our screening process.
And what kind of response have you received from the kids who these letters are addressed to?
So initially, Greg, we reached out to a lot of our friends via Facebook and email just to tell them about anotetomykid.com and you know, encourage them to talk to their parents about writing letters just so we could get things launched. And they, you know, after seeing their parents' letters posted on the site, they've reached out to us and said what an amazing experience it's been. To read, you know, their parents' letters has been just an awesome emotional journey for them, and that they'll treasure these letters forever. I know the letters from my parents that I received, I'll keep for the rest of my life. I mean, it's an absolute, you know, blessing to have something like this written down on paper that you can refer to, you know, whenever you feel like maybe you need a little extra love.
Yeah, and I would think it would be very cathartic for parents as well. It enables them to sort of process their thoughts about their kids coming out and sort of lay everything out line by line. But what a powerful way to share it so publicly, and really come out in essence as a parent in support of your gay or lesbian child.
You know, what we realized when we launched the site, well, I don't think we really thought about this, Patrick, initially, and hopefully you'll agree with me, but I think we just wanted a platform for kids. And then what we realized as we started reading these letters is like, wow, we've created a platform for parents too. Because so many people have such a hard time putting down, you know, in words how they feel about a specific issue, especially when it's so emotional, like, you know, telling your gay child that it doesn't matter that you're gay, I love you no matter what. So this became a platform for parents, but it also became, I think, a platform for parents who are having a hard time putting this down in words. Now they have a resource to go to and to do some research and say, that's how that parent said it, and I think I want to say it that way too.
And I don't know that there's anything like that out there anywhere.
Yeah, that was one of the real reasons I wanted to get this project going, and what really fueled, you know, my intense energy behind it initially was that I have some friends whose parents haven't been able to really talk to them about it, and they go about life as if, you know, they don't have a gay son or daughter, you know, and we wanted to give them a chance to see what other parents are saying and to hopefully help them figure out how to have a very important conversation with their child so they could become closer as well.
Yeah, and I think you just hit a very important point there, helping other parents know the right thing to say. I think a lot of parents who want to be supportive just don't quite know how to say it.
Right.
And it's such a critical moment, because if you say the wrong thing, it can really cause a lot of pain. What do you both hope for the future of the site?
I mean, our goal is that we get a letter up on the site every single day. Another goal is that this turns into an organization that really helps kids understand that there are parents out there that love their child no matter what, that we continue to move forward with using this as a platform for parents to express themselves on how much they love their child, and also, like I said before, a platform for a parent just trying to figure out, how do I express myself? Patrick and I also have a personal goal that we would love to create, through a notetomykid.com, a scholarship fund, and send a child to school every year. You know, we haven't figured out what that exact goal is, what the number is, but we really want this. We really want kids to be able to be educated, because we both feel like we're educated people, and being educated and being intelligent helped us come up with this creative and wonderful idea. And so we want to make sure that we pass that down to other kids out there.
Fabulous. Well, Michael, I understand you are in Guerneville, and you've just opened a brand new store. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I just opened up a store called the Big Bottom Market. It's a gourmet deli and marketplace. We sell everything pretty much local. I would say 75% of what we sell is local. It's hard to be 100% local owning a deli. We have a very extensive Sonoma County wine list. The one interesting thing about our wine list is that we do invite what we call the exchange student in once a month. The exchange student is a wine from somewhere else in the world that we have on the list as well. Last month was a Sancerre. This month is called Scarpetta. It's an Italian wine, a Pinot Grigio. But we're having a lot of fun with it. We do winemaker events every Thursday. We have signature sandwiches that have been really popular. And wonderful retail products, both food retail products and non-food retail products. So it's great. We'd love to have you come out.
Well, being a total foodie, I can't wait to check it out. Where in Guerneville are you?
We are right on Main Street, 16228 Main Street, next to King's Sport and Tackle, and next to the Whitetail Wine Bar, which is a new wine bar that just opened up in town.
And so if people come out on weekends, it sounds like that's a great place to go in and grab a sandwich. You can even do a picnic lunch if you're heading to the beach.
Yeah, grab a sandwich, do a picnic lunch. We also do something called tasting packs. You can come in, like we always say, don't go wine tasting without us. Very few wineries have food available, and if you're going around wine tasting all day, we can put together a tasting pack for you with charcuterie and cheese, or we can do one of our boxed lunches with one of our signature sandwiches, a cookie, and a little side salad, and you can take that to the wineries with you and taste so that you're filling your belly while you're tasting wine.
Sounds like a great idea. And you're on Facebook as well?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so search for the Big Bottom Market on Facebook. And then definitely get out to Guerneville next time you're up at the river and visit Michael. Patrick Wallace, Michael Volpott, thank you so much. The creators of a fantastic website and notetomykid.com. I appreciate the time and being with us tonight on Outbeat Radio.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Well, we're going to take a quick music break. And because October is also the month when we remember a time in 1998 when a 21-year-old college student named Matthew Shepard was murdered in a vicious hate crime, I'd like to share with you the song Elton John wrote about Matthew and that event. Here's American Triangle.
Seen him playing in his backyard. Young boy just starting out. So much history in this landscape. So much confusion, so much doubt. Been there drinking on that front porch. Angry kids. Looks like a painting, that blue skyline. God hates facts where we come from. Western sky, don't make a right. Home of the brave, don't make no sense. I seen a scarecrow. In a while, let the die on a high ridge fence. It's a cold, cold world. It's a cold, cold world. It's a cold wind blow. Why hold me? Coyotes running down a deer. Hate what we don't understand. You pioneers, give us your children. But it's your blood that stains their hands. Western skies, don't make a right. Home of the brave, don't make no sense. I've seen a scarecrow wrapped in a wire, left to die on a high ridge fence. It's a cold, cold world. It's a cold, cold world. Folks up ahead, to ignorance and innocence, three lives drift on different winds, two lives ruined, one life spent. Western skies don't make a rise.
in a while. Let the die on a high ridge fence. It's a cool, cool world. It's a cool, cool world. It's a cold wind blowing Wyoming. It's a cool, cool world. It's a cool, cool world. It's a cold wind blowing.
And welcome back. You're listening to Outbeat Now here on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. And good evening, everyone. Welcome once again to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a program for and about LGBT youth here in the North Bay and beyond. And of course, you'll find us here every month on the fourth Sunday as part of Outbeat Now. We have two guests tonight. Our first one is firefighter Brett Dunkel, who comes to us via Skype all the way from South Florida. And he's here to talk about a new website he's created for LGBT youth called You Can Be Anything You Want to Be. Brett, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you for having me.
So Brett, tell us about your new website.
Basically, I want kids to know that, you know, just because you might be gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, or just questioning your sexuality in general, that does not have to limit you in what you can accomplish in your life. You know, if I had come out to myself earlier in life, I don't think I would have pursued a career in the fire service, just because I, at the time, didn't think that it was possible. I didn't believe there was gay firemen or policemen, or, you know, I kind of believed some of the stereotypes that, you know, you would have a, you know, more stereotypical career. You know, it wasn't until I was in the fire service and finally came out to myself and, you know, met a few other people who were gay firefighters that I realized I was completely wrong. And, you know, by starting this project, that's kind of what I want to accomplish, is to let these kids know that just because they are questioning themselves, that doesn't have to limit their future careers.
Where did the idea come from? I mean, what inspired you to put out the effort and and the creativity to put this together?
Obviously, with your book and being in the book, I've got to experience a lot of new things and got to get my story out there. And I've really enjoyed helping people by virtue of providing my story to people. And luckily, through the book, we've been able to do some appearances, and actually, I've gotten the opportunity to speak in front of some groups about my story and about the aspect of my story that, you know, just because I am gay doesn't mean that I can't be a fireman. And then, you know, some of the other gentlemen from the book and so on, you know, basically the same thing, whether they be police officers or EMS workers or so on. So in June, we were in Pittsburgh to do one of the book events, and there was a question from the audience that basically was, you know, the young lady was asking if we perform this kind of a service to GSAs by coming out and speaking to them. And I was thinking to myself, you know, that's an excellent idea, but unfortunately, you know, we just can't do that logistically. You know, there's just so many GSAs and there's so few of us that it would just be near impossible. So that kind of, you know, sat in the back of my mind, and we had spoken about it, you know, throughout the rest of the weekend. Then on the flight home, I was reading the Pride magazine for Pride. There was an article in there about the website called I'm From Driftwood, and it was a website I've been following for probably a year or two prior to that. And it's basically, if, you know, if you've never seen it, it's people tell their stories about where they're from and, you know, a little bit about growing up in a small town or, you know, even a big city, and being gay and what they go through. So those two kind of things bounced around for a little while on the flight, and by the time I landed, I had written about half a dozen pages worth of notes, and the idea for You Can Be Anything was well on its way to becoming a reality.
So your site is very similar to, conceptually, the It Gets Better campaign, and I'm from Driftwood, in that people submit videos. Is that how it works?
Yes, pretty much anybody can submit a video or even a written story. If, you know, some people aren't tech savvy, some people don't like to see themselves on video. Some people, for whatever reason, just, you know, can't tell their story without, you know, without being anonymous. So we want to give these kids as many examples as possible, you know, whether it be you're a firefighter or you're a doctor, a lawyer, you know, or even a garbage man, because every job you can imagine, there's some kid out there who wants to do that job, and I want to be able to provide an example of a successful gay individual doing that job so that that person can sit there and say, oh, wow, I connect with that person, and hey, they, you know, even though they're gay, they're successful at what they're doing. So, you know, there's hope for me, basically.
Sure. So it's more than just police officers and firefighters that you're looking for. For our older listeners that are out there, give me some other ideas about the kinds of jobs or vocations that you're interested in featuring on the site.
Yes, it's absolutely open to anybody. I, you know, whatever your job is, however menial you think your job might be, it's not. There's somebody out there who wants to do your job and is concerned because they have these feelings that they're unsure of, and they don't believe that they can do that job because of those feelings. So it doesn't matter what your job is, you know, how successful you are or anything, just that you're able to, you're willing, you know, enough to provide your story, to give that inspiration.
Well, great. Well, we've got an example from the website, and this is from Brian, who's a realtor in South Florida, and he submitted his video. We'll play you the audio track from that now.
Hi, my name is Brian. I'm a 33-year-old gay professional who currently lives in Oakland Park, Florida. I moved to Florida when I was 6 years old with my family and grew up in Fort Lauderdale, going to elementary, middle, and high school. All of my life, I questioned my sexuality and whether or not I actually was gay and if I felt comfortable enough to come out of the closet. When I was 30 years old, I felt that it was actually time to do myself a favor and treat myself with respect, honesty, and dignity, and be true to myself and my sexuality. I came out of the closet when I was 30 years old to my friends and family, and to this day, the ones who matter, the ones who love me unconditionally, are still here, and our relationships are stronger than ever. Currently, I'm a real estate professional and have been in that profession for over 10 years. I've earned the highest designations in commercial and residential real estate. I serve as the sacred service coordinator at the local Unity Church, and am in a committed relationship with my partner, Jesse. Just because you're gay does not mean that you're less than anybody, and it also doesn't mean that anybody else is better than you. You owe it to yourself to be true to yourself, to love and respect yourself, to let yourself shine, to pursue your dreams and your goals, to go after what you want in life. No one should tell you what to do and allow you to feel little or anything less than what they are. You are a true, individual, unique person who's not trying to fit into any category or any characteristic stereotype that's out there. Be yourself, go after your dreams, and shine.
Yeah, that's really great, Brett. And so tell us how someone could go about making and submitting a video then to your site.
Basically, you know, if you have a webcam on your computer, that's sufficient. It doesn't have to be professional. Basically, just getting your story out there. You know, there's a few little guidelines that we have on our website that we ask, you know, keeping the camera steady, not using curse words, those kind of things. But aside from that, you know, we're not asking for a professional production. And if you have a written story, you can just go to the website. There's a submit section. You can either copy and paste it into the online form, or you can just email it to us directly.
Well, I see on your website that you're hoping to offer scholarships. Tell us about that.
Yes, we are planning to offer two $1,000 scholarships in the fall and then two $1,000 scholarships in the spring each year.
And what are those scholarships going to be for?
Basically providing an education, you know, however that money needs to be spent, whether it be on books or tuition, you know. We don't really limit you too much as to how you can spend it, as long as it is going towards, you know, your school or your books for school. And then there is some certain minimum requirements We would hope to attract individuals who are trying to, present a positive image in the LGBT community. So we do ask that people basically write a narrative as to what they've done to promote the LGBT community.
So tell us where people can go to learn more about You Can Be Anything.
You can visit us on the web, youcanbeanything.org. We are also on Facebook, facebook.com/youcanbeanything. And we also have a Twitter feed, which is YCBA Project.
And I would imagine that would also be the place people can go to if they want to support the organization with a donation.
Absolutely.
Great.
Go right to our website, and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner.
We've been talking with firefighter Brett Dunkel from Florida, who is the creator and mind behind the You Can Be Anything website. We'll have that link on our own website at outbeatradio.com. Be sure to check it out. Thanks for being with us tonight, Brett.
Thank you for having me.
The Trevor Project is the leading national organization focused on crisis and suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. If you're feeling helpless or hopeless, there's always a safe place to turn. Call the Trevor Helpline at 8664-U-TREVOR. It's free and confidential, and you can talk to someone 24 hours a day. Or visit the website at thetrevorproject.org. Be proud of who you are.
And our next guest has all kinds of reasons to be proud of who he is. We talked with him last year on the show, and he's back now as a candidate for mayor for his hometown. Michael Huerta, welcome back to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you much, Greg.
The last time you were on the show, you were here to talk about your incredible video you made celebrating life and your 25th birthday. What have you been up to since then?
Well, you know, that video is when I talked about my personal struggles with depression and suicide. And it was a few months before the It Gets Better project came out, and so it received a little bit more attention than some of the other videos just because it was different. And so since then, I've been blessed for two different reasons. One, that I've been able to help others through their struggles and through their problems. But two, that I've been able to hear from so many different people their challenges and their successes with suicide and depression. Since then, I've been working to promote LGBT equality here in my home state of New Mexico. I'm one of the board members of our state LGBTQ centers. And what we do is we work across the state to really build in opportunities for young people and LGBT people to meet other people, to have someone to talk to, and to have resources. A lot of people don't realize that in New Mexico, our state is a massive state. Our second congressional district alone is larger than the state of Pennsylvania. And so when you deal with a state that size, you have to understand that you're dealing with a lot of rural communities. And in those rural communities, there may only be one or two out LGBT people. And so it's important that they have resources and networks to survive at some times.
Right. And I had no idea New Mexico was that big.
Yeah, we are. You know, it's interesting that, you know, in one part of our state we'll have very large targeted Native American population, and others will have Anglo populations, Hispanic, and Hobbs, New Mexico, we have a large African American population. But in these diverse communities, what's consistent is that there are LGBT people there. And a lot of people are surprised to find out how many LGBT people we have in New Mexico. I was at an event recently. I've worked in education reform here in the state. And I was at an event, a statewide conference, where there were counselors and administrators. At that event, I was asked to speak about being LGBT in public schools. And after speaking for about 3 or 4 minutes, a young man came up to me afterwards. He was the only there because his mom is a counselor at a small school in New Mexico. I'd never heard of his town before, and I'm pretty knowledgeable about New Mexico. His town only has 200 people, and he told me I was the first gay person that he's ever met in real life. We became Facebook friends, and I'm glad to see him open up and begin to just see the world outside of his own community. But you know, my thought and my perspective on it is we can't forget, for those of us who live in bigger communities like San Francisco or New York or Orlando or Dallas, we can't forget what it's like to live in one of these rural communities. And the truth is, the vast majority of LGBT people live there, and they need a voice. And so while we're fighting for marriage equality, while we're fighting for employment non-discrimination, I hope we never forget the people who need a voice in these rural and middle communities.
Wow. I mean, it seems just incredible to me that in 2011 that someone would not be able to connect, you know, even living in a small town.
Yeah.
But good for you.
Well, and, you know, even for them, you know, we think for so many different types of people who don't know one of us. They're oftentimes some of our opponents, our political opponents, those who don't support marriage equality or those who don't support a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And for me, it's easy to understand why a lot of these people have never encountered an openly gay person. But it's a completely different thing to try to understand the idea of gay and lesbian people out there who've never met another gay or lesbian person. And so, you know, we take, you know, our gay culture sometimes, we take it for granted. You know, we're part of it almost every day, and it's just important to remember that there are those out there who aren't, and they are a crucial part of our movement, because while there are many of us who will stay in our big cities, they really are on the ground when it comes to the fight for LGBT equality. One, because they're the people who are going to connect with those who support we need to bring over. But then two, those are the ones who receive the brunt of the discrimination. And so, yeah, we have to remember them.
Right, right. It really seems like you're on a journey since we first spoke. You know, I remember you talking about wanting to become more involved in activism. But now you're running for mayor of the city of Las Cruces. What inspired you to run for public office?
Well, I start by saying it wasn't my idea. There were, over the period, I'm a lifelong New Mexican, a lifelong Las Cruces. Over the past few months, there were several people in town who asked me to consider running for mayor. And so at first I kind of laughed it off, because I am younger than what most people would want to see in a mayor. And so I kind of laughed it off. But then I started to see more and more support, more and more urging from both Democrats and more importantly, Republicans in my town. So Las Cruces is, while we're the second largest city in New Mexico, we're still a population of only around 98,000 people, according to the last census. So for our state, a large community, for the country, still a pretty small community. Because of that, when you have a certain amount of people and a certain element of the power and authority in the town asking you to consider, you have to take it serious. And so for me, I had to do a few things. Number one, I had to ask myself, is this a race I can win? Not is it a race that's guaranteed, but is it a race that I can win? And the answer was yes. Two, is it a race where I know I can do better than my opponents? And actually serving in the position? And the answer there was yes. But three, and the most challenging question was, is this a position that I know when I win, I can do well, and that I can understand for myself, I can serve successfully? And that's the question that took me some time to reflect on, and the answer was yes. And truthfully, those are three questions I wish more politicians in this country asked themselves. Because you shouldn't be doing it for the power or for the position or for the pay, but instead you should be doing it, one, because you can, two, because you can do it better than your opponents, but three, because you know you can do a good job.
Well, how out are you in your campaign and to your public?
Well, I'm an openly gay man, and what's interesting, and, you know, this has been, I'm glad to talk to you about this because it's been so interesting in town. New Mexico is one of two states, according to the Victory Fund, the national organization that puts LGBT people into public office. New Mexico is one of only two states that has never elected an openly gay man to any position of any kind ever. It's us and Oklahoma. And so for me as a New Mexican, that's not a record that I'm proud of, gay or straight. So I understand that inherently there's a challenge because I'd be the first gay man in our state to hold public office. Because of that, and because I was an openly gay man, I decided strategically to come out in the first article. And I've received a lot of press here locally. But our largest paper ran an article front page about me, and they ran several articles. But in the first one, they asked me, you know, are you willing to be publicly gay? And I said, of course, I'm a gay man. That's who I am. And they asked me, they said, how do you think that's going to affect your race? We've never had a gay person serve here. And I told them, I know Las Cruces. I'm from Las Cruces. I'm a part of Las Cruces. And I know that more than anything, We are a tolerant, accepting, and loving community. And when we have such bigger problems and such bigger challenges, people are going to care less that I'm a gay man and more that I have the best ideas in this race, less that I'm a gay man and more that I will be the best advocate for Las Cruces. And so far, it's going pretty well. And so I'm an out gay man. And you know, what's interesting is it's a nonpartisan race, meaning you run as your name, not as a party, even though I'm a Democrat. And when I first started talking, because there were press reports about me thinking about getting into the race, both of my opponents, and I shouldn't say them as much as some of their supporters, were kind of running a hush-hush campaign, you know, whispering, well, that's the gay guy, you know, can he really be elected? What I found as a strategy, if you come out, you know, come running out of the closet saying, I'm gay and I'm here, the hush campaign kind of goes away, because you can't really whisper that he's gay because I already yelled it out the rooftops.
Sure. And I, that's so true in so many venues in life.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
Good for you.
I'll tell you a quick story. We have a farmer's market in Las Cruces that is known across the country. In fact, there's a National Farmer's Market Association that's having a national competition right now, and Las Cruces is in first place for our farmer's market. So I go there every Wednesday and Saturday, and I receive a lot of support from a lot of the vendors because they're upset at a couple of my opponents. I was there about a month ago. A man comes up to me. He's probably around 6'2", white, looks like he's in his early to mid-80s. He has a cowboy hat, a big old belt buckle, and cowboy boots. When he gets around, you don't know, 2 or 3 feet away from me, I notice that he has a Tea Party pin in his hat. He comes up to me and he says, is your name Michael Herta? I said, yes, sir, it is. He said, are you the young man running for mayor? I said, yes, sir, I am. He says, a lot of these vendors are telling me really good things about you, but they also told me something else. I said, what's that? The man tells me, they told me you're a homosexual. Is that true? I said, yes, sir, I am. He says, young man, I have one question for you. If you're elected mayor, are you going to govern like a homosexual? My response, I do not know where it came from, but I looked at him and said, sir, if you're asking me if I plan on wearing high heels to the city council meeting, the answer is no. He starts cracking up. He and I get to talk for about 45 minutes. At the end of it, come to find out, he's an active member in our local Tea Party, a lifelong Republican, and I will be one of the first Democrats that he ever votes for. Offered me his support. More than that, he now knows that I'm a gay man. More than that, on my end, the blessing, I was the first gay person that he has ever met. And so in my end, what, you know, with the life lesson and the lesson that I took in the campaign from that was, you know, don't be afraid to be who you are, because I think if you have a certain level of personal and political confidence, and if you have the ideas, the substance, and the issues to come along with it, the gay will go away. The idea of what you are and what that should be and what that should look like won't be as important as what you're talking about. And so a 25-year-old gay man, Democrat, was able to bring over this man, 80 years old, Tea Party member, lifelong conservative. That's moving our movement forward. And at the same time, more importantly, it's moving my city forward, because we can talk about, you know, the issues that matter. So, you know, that was just a great experience for me.
I love that story. That just made my whole day. That's great. Good for you. Very, very good. Well, tell us about some of the other challenges that you faced in the campaign.
Well, you know, the biggest thing that people look at, you know, when they see the paper, because they like the ideas, they like my experience, they like my resume, but they can't. A lot of people struggle getting around the idea that I'm 25 years old, and you know, that's probably the biggest challenge, even more than being gay. You know, when that challenge is confronted to me, I have to inform people. Las Cruces, unlike a lot of other cities, our mayor position is not a strong position. We have a city manager, and a lot of smaller communities have city managers. The city manager has all the administrative power, responsibility, and authority. So the mayor only has a vote on the council, no veto power, no even tie-breaking power, and they have no administrative duties. In fact, our city charter calls the mayor a figurehead position. So that means the job of the mayor is to be the number one advocate, lobbyist, and spokesperson for the city. And when that's the position, I'm the best qualified candidate. I'm the best experienced candidate for it. And so that's what I tell people first and primarily. The other part that I inform people, there are young people elected across this country in more powerful positions than the one I hold currently, or than the one that I hope to hold. The mayor of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when he was elected, he was 25 or 26 years old. Aaron Schock, the youngest member of Congress, when he was elected, a Republican, he was 25 or 26 years old. There are examples across this country of young people holding office, and I think that's a benefit, because you have to understand that in this 21st century economy, the key, in my mind, the key principle, the key characteristic that you need, either in nonprofits, in our LGBT movement, in city government, in campaigns, the number one characteristic that you need is innovation. Because in this economy where everyone is competing, in this economy where technology is crucial, innovation is what's going to make the difference between winning and losing, between being successful and not successful. And inherently, young people are innovative thinkers. We have innovative thinkers across the board, but, you know, look at examples of successful companies, successful corporations in this country. They had and have young, innovative thinkers. Facebook, Google, Twitter, young, innovative thinking. That's, I think, something we need to bring to city government. And that's something I think we need to bring to nonprofits. So, you know, that's the added blessing of being young. You know, in Las Cruces, I'm a proud gay man. And I'm not running on gay issues, but I'm proud of gay issues. But what's at the centerpiece of my political thinking, in the same way that it was for Harvey Milk, my politics comes as a result of my gay experience. And a lot of people shy away from that. I don't. I fight for those in poverty, and I fight for those in middle class, and I want to be their advocate because I know as a gay man what it means to not have a voice. I want to fight for them because I know as a gay man coming up in a conservative town what it means to be marginalized. And so it's that experience that I bring with me to this campaign. It's that understanding that I bring with me to this campaign. And it's also that understanding and that experience that allows me to reach out to people of diverse audiences, whether it's conservatives, whether it's women, other minorities. And so, you know, and I understand the difference in approaches, but I've always kind of hesitated at someone who said, well, you know, I'm running for office and I just happen to be a gay man. I don't just happen to be a gay man. Being a gay man is at the centerpiece of who I am as a person and who I am as a candidate. And that's not something I shy away from because it makes me a better politician. It makes me a better candidate. And it's going to make me a better public servant.
Fantastic. Tell us where people can go to learn more about you and your campaign.
Yeah, well, you can go to michaelrayhuerta.com. That's Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Ray, R-A-Y, and Huerta, H-U-E-R-T-A.com. You can find me on Facebook if you just search Michael Ray Huerta. If you have any questions for me, any ideas, any help financially, I'd really appreciate it. I'm excited, you know, to make history here in New Mexico, not only as a first gay person elected, but more than anything, history so that young people in our town can have an opportunity for success. The middle class can be strengthened, and so once again, we can bring jobs to our community.
Fantastic. And if you missed those websites, we'll have them posted on our own website at outbeatyouth.com. Michael, thanks so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Radio. And that does bring us to the end of another show. You can look forward to seeing us again next week with a special edition of Outbeat Extra when we take a look at how Matthew Shepard's story has changed the world. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. Have a good week.